This is Audible.
Equinox. Horizon. Book 3. Written by Tabitha Lord. Narrated by D.W. Draffin. Derek. Chapter 1. Derek checked his oxygen level, secured his helmet, and tapped a gloved thumb against the protective fabric of his suit. "Captain, we are aligned with the Carina," he heard the pilot's voice through the comm in his ear. "Extending the docking port now." A hum vibrated under his feet, followed by a thud. "Port attached. The seal is good." "Roger that," he answered robotically. Derek knew it wasn't a good idea for him to lead the boarding team, but he was in charge of Almagest's newly minted space fleet. No one outranked him, and no one could countermand his orders. He had to be the first one on board. If she was dead, he had to be the first to see her, the first to stand in the last place she stood. His brain felt numb, his emotions dull and distant. "Give me a few minutes," he said to the team suited up next to him. A chorus of subdued, "Yes, sirs," answered. He tapped the control panel and the door in front of him slid open. Closing his eyes, Derek tried to steady his breath before stepping onto the deck of the Carina. She was a small ship, a long-range shuttle with an enhanced weapons system. Fast and maneuverable, she was the vessel of choice for delivering high-profile diplomats to distant worlds. On approach, Derek had seen the gaping hole where the attacking ship had latched onto her side and ripped through her hull. The thought of what he might find on board made his stomach churn. Swallowing back the bile in his throat, he forced himself to put one foot in front of the other. He repeated her name over and over in his mind, as if the power of his thoughts could will her to live. As soon as he stepped into the dimly lit corridor, Derek could tell that the gravitational system was still functioning. Carina's emergency systems had kicked in, sealing off compartments and shunting emergency power to life support. From where Derek stood, nothing looked amiss. He passed by the empty crew quarters, catching a glimpse of Kaylee's travel bag, resting on one of the bunks. Once he'd made his way to the bridge, he stood, hesitant, outside the closed door. This was where she'd be. For him, space travel was a part of life, but for Kaylee, who'd never known a world outside her own until adulthood, it was magical. Every launch thrilled her, and she could spend hours gazing at the stars. Taking a deep breath, he punched the override code into the lock. When the door slid open, carnage assaulted him. Blood splattered the control panel and pooled in sticky puddles on the floor. A body lay contorted over the pilot seat, another sprawled face down on the floor. But there was no sign of Kaylee. She wasn't here. Maybe she wasn't dead. He leaned heavily against the doorframe, a warm rush of relief spreading through his body. He could deal with anything but dead. The fog that had engulfed him since he'd received the distress call from Carina 12 hours earlier lifted. Mind racing, he barked into the comm. "Evans, get the team in here!" Moments later, the group appeared. "Process every inch of this ship. Transfer all sensor data, cockpit recordings, and video feed directly to the command center. Get the bodies ready for transport," he instructed, the paralysis that had gripped him completely dispelled. 6 hours later, Derek was back on Almagest. He hadn't slept, but he'd managed to shower. Running a hand through his damp hair, he sat at a workstation in the Mission Control Center. The information scrolling across his screen told a familiar story of a ship materializing out of nowhere, launching a quick and dirty attack, and then disappearing. Even before all the data could be analyzed, he knew it was the Drakkarans. He had a communication scheduled with Admiral Reyes in less than an hour, so he wasted no time playing back the cockpit video recordings. White-knuckling the armrests of his chair, he watched the pilot's chest explode in a red haze. When he heard Kaylee's screams, he slammed his fist onto the desk. He played the feed of the enemy soldier carrying her unconscious body out of the ship, over and over, until finally a soft knock sounded behind him. Finn stood in the doorway. The dark circles under the younger man's eyes told Derek that he hadn't been sleeping either.
"Find anything useful?" Finn asked.
Derek sighed and rubbed his hands over his face before answering.
"Not really. It was definitely a Drakkaran attack, but we suspected that already." "She's alive, though?" Finn asked, voice pleading for confirmation.
Finn had been Kaylee's friend before he became Derek's. An Amathi soldier turned resistance fighter in the recent civil war, he had befriended Kaylee and then recruited her to the cause. When the resistance finally defeated the ruling regime, Finn and Kaylee shared transitional leadership roles in the construction of their new government. Now, Finn retained control of Almagest's military forces, while Derek helped him build a space fleet, train the pilots, and move the planet from a vulnerable, rogue world to a protected, integrated member of the Interplanetary Alliance. Kaylee's ship had been en route to Corleone, seat of the Interplanetary Alliance, to formally accept Almagest's membership into that body when the Drakkarans attacked.
"She was alive when they took her," Derek answered.
Finn visibly relaxed, tension draining from his body.
"What do they want with her?"
Derek drummed his fingers on the desk.
"When Marcus was selling the Nivali kids, my team on Horizon tried to track down the crew he was dealing with. Marcus, the dictator in power before the war, had begun selling gifted Nivali children on the black market in return for weapons, advanced technology, and information."
"I remember," Finn replied.
"We found the mercenary crew and one of the Nivali girls, but before we could rescue her, she was sold to someone else, someone we knew had worked with the Drakkarans. If the Drakkarans got a hold of the Nivali girl and realized there were others like her, they'd be looking for the source."
Derek nodded. "And Kaylee joined us on mission once while she was aboard the Horizon. She interrogated a Drakkaran using her gift. He escaped, and I'm sure they've started putting the pieces together."
"The Drakkarans knew Kaylee was on the Carina. That means they know the Nivali are from Almagest," Finn said.
Derek met Finn's worried gaze.
"I believe they do now. But the Aquila is still patrolling Almagest's airspace, and we have a first line of defense ready. I'm about to talk to the Admiral of the Inter-Allied Forces and brief him on the situation. Even though Kaylee didn't make it to Corleone, Almagest is now a member world. We'll protect this planet," he promised in the most assuring tone he could muster. "The Drakkarans were a fearsome enemy. Despite Alliance intervention in the past, they'd taken whole worlds. Derek could only take comfort knowing that at least Almagest had some warning."
"What about Kaylee?" Finn asked. Derek opened his mouth to speak and then closed it again. When he could finally make his voice work, he said,
"I'll find her. Whatever it takes."
Kaylee, Chapter 2. Kaylee huddled in the corner of the cell, arms wrapped protectively around her knees. Bone-deep exhaustion and a blinding headache threatened to pull her into unconsciousness. She longed to give in, to surrender to the darkness, but with a meager shred of mental strength, she fought the urge. Scanning the stark room, she couldn't find any weaknesses. The cell door locked from the outside, and the ventilation tube over her head hovered well out of reach. Essentially, she was imprisoned in a steel box. Under the glaring artificial lights, day and night were indistinguishable, and she knew she'd lost huge chunks of time. Her memories tried to return. She fought to make sense of bits and pieces of hazy images, but they remained incoherent and out of focus, like a long-range transmission interrupted by an electromagnetic storm. The last clear memory she had was of the Carina's pilot, Lieutenant Riggs, informing her they'd just cleared the Almagest system.
Her belly churned with both excitement and nervousness. This mission was the culmination of her hard work and the determination of so many other good people. She'd barely survived the devastating war that ripped through her civilization when so many others hadn't. The trauma of loss felt like an old scar, noticeable and sore, a permanent mark on her body, but one she'd learned to live with. When her people had finally found true peace, they'd grieved together, healed as best they could, and then labored to build a new, unified government.
that government was now strong enough to participate in and receive protection from the Interplanetary Alliance. Seated behind the crew in the cockpit of the Carina, Kaylee felt deep satisfaction. This gift of belonging was something they had all earned. And now, finally, Kaylee had dreams of her own again. She and Derek were building a life together. He'd asked her to marry him. A blast jolted her from her thoughts. If she hadn't been harnessed into her seat, she would have been thrown out of it. Alarms blared. She heard herself scream. Riggs, well-seasoned and hand-picked by Derek, spoke into the comm. "Almagest Control, this is the Carina. We are under attack. We've lost thrusters and weapons." Another jolt, followed by the scraping sound of metal on metal, rattled her teeth. She gripped the armrests, frozen in terror. "They've breached the hull!" The pilot's voice rang with alarm. He reached under his seat for his sidearm and unbuckled his safety harness, his co-pilot doing the same. When the aft compartment door slid open, they fired at the incoming enemy, but to no avail. Armor protected tall bodies, helmets covered heads and faces. When the first figure raised his weapon, Kaylee screamed again. Time slowed. She watched each action occur as if it were a single event. The insurgent's gun fired. A hole appeared in Riggs' chest. Blood sprayed the control console behind him. His body fell heavily backward. One more shot. The co-pilot's body spun around, crashed against the panel, slid to the floor. Blood pooled around him, crimson against steel gray. Kaylee's throat was raw from screaming. Her chest heaved and she squeezed her eyes shut, expecting that the next shot would be for her. But it never came. Instead, when she opened her eyes, a gloved hand held a syringe to her neck. The tiny needle punctured her skin. Numbing warmth spread from her chest, to her belly, to her limbs. Her vision blurred, and she tipped into darkness. She attributed the pounding in her skull to the side effects of whatever drug they'd used on her. Her stomach roiled from the pain, from the recurring vision of Riggs' stunned face as he tumbled backward in death. He had a family. She'd met them. Leaning her head against the cold wall, she tried to make sense of what had happened to the Carina, and only one thing made sense. When the cell door finally slid open, she wasn't surprised to see a Drakkaran staring down at her, but she was surprised to see this particular Drakkaran. A chill rippled up her spine. Years ago, she'd interrogated this man. She'd searched his mind for information to stop a deadly terrorist attack and found what she was looking for. But the experience had left her shaken and agitated, his mind difficult to penetrate. The connection, once established, disorienting. As he stepped into the room, she involuntarily shrank backward, pressing her body against the wall. Expressionless, he spoke. "Come with me." Two more men stood beside him, their postures non-threatening, but she wasn't fooled. Daksha Karan, her Drakkaran captor, knew about her abilities. She pulled herself to her feet, legs shaking, and followed him out of the cell. Recessed windows near the ceiling let in sunlight. She was no longer on a ship. Kaylee tried to pay attention to her surroundings, to the path they took through sterile hallways, in case she might have to navigate them on her own. She'd escaped from a military prison once before, and although she had no real idea where she was now, she had to do something. She had to act like her attention to detail might prove worthwhile, or else she'd lose hold of her tiny thread of composure and spiral into a panic. But when Karan led her into the laboratory, when she saw the metal table with wrist and ankle restraints attached, her self-control dissolved anyway. She stumbled into her captor, who grabbed her firmly by the back of the neck and propelled her forward. "What are you doing?" fear made her voice catch. Karan didn't speak. His two guards trained their weapons on her while he maneuvered her onto the table and fastened the restraints. As she pulled uselessly against them, her mind clouded in terror. Kaylee's eyes darted around the room, looking for something, anything, to help her escape. But even if she could incapacitate Karan, she'd never get past the guards. When her eyes met Karan's, she desperately tried to push her mind into his, but his consciousness was sealed off to her, and without physical contact, she couldn't breach his mental barrier.
"Please, don't!"
she begged. He stepped away from her and spoke to one of the guards.
"Tell the team she's secure. They can begin."
The Drakkaran stood in front of a workstation. Kaylee strained to see what he was doing and to take stock of the room's contents. It looked like a medical laboratory, the equipment familiar and the space neatly organized. When the door slid open a few minutes later, three people entered. The first, a woman, approached Kaylee, pushing an equipment cart to the side of the table. Kaylee's heart thudded in her chest, sweat beating at her scalp. While the woman worked, Kaylee followed her every movement. Wordlessly, the Drakkaran attached monitors to Kaylee's chest and forehead. She took blood samples and DNA swabs, measured heart rate, breathing, and blood pressure. Nothing beyond what might happen at a normal physical examination. As she worked, the Drakkaran woman spoke to her colleagues in a clipped, authoritative voice, and they followed her directions impeccably. Her lithe body moved with economical grace, nothing wasted, neither an errant motion nor an unintentional expression. Thick, dark hair swept into a tight knot at the base of her elegant neck. Piercing brown eyes, several shades darker than her flawless skin, reflected a sharp intelligence. When finished, she packed away her samples and for a brief moment stood staring over Kaylee. Kaylee tried to push her mind into the woman's survival instinct and blinding terror, ignoring the voice in her head that recoiled at violating someone else's thoughts. But, as with Karan, she couldn't gain access. When the woman and her assistants were gone, Karan unfastened the restraints and motioned for Kaylee to stand.
"Why are you doing this?"
He stared back at her for so long she thought he wouldn't answer. Finally, he asked,
"You don't know."
She heard a note of surprise in his voice, the first glimpse of emotion she'd seen from him. She shook her head, but dread gnawed at her.
Chapter 3.
She lay on the cot in her cell after a meal of unidentifiable protein and a jug of water. Her stomach rebelled at the food, but she drank down the water in greedy gulps. Desperate to find some piece of useful information, she pushed her mind out as far as it would go. The pulsing life force of strangers, the tangle of their distant thoughts, hummed back against Kaylee's own. She sat up in surprise. The minds she felt weren't Drakkaran. The Drakkarans had invaded and now occupied several Alliance worlds. Maybe she was on one of them. She tried to sort through the background noise, to find some clue, but the voices were too distant. With the adrenaline gone from her body, she fell into a fitful sleep. When Karan came for her again, she stumbled, bleary-eyed, down the same hallway. This time, as soon as she could string a coherent sentence together, she rushed to question him.
"Where are we? Can't you at least tell me what planet we're on? Please!"
This was met by his familiar stony silence. He and the security detail marched her back to the lab. Despite the relatively benign earlier session in the laboratory, Kaylee spiraled into a panic when Karan secured her to the table. Squeezing her eyes shut, she counted her own breaths, fighting against the darkness that hovered at the edge of her consciousness. The Drakkaran woman and her team entered and attached leads to Kaylee's temples and chest. Data from her body transmitted to several monitors and processing units, cluttering the room. Instead of taking her blood as she'd done the day before, the woman injected Kaylee with a vial of clear liquid. At first, Kaylee didn't feel anything other than the negligible sting of the needle penetrating her skin. But slowly, the background noise in her mind disappeared. Her ability to sense others, to hear them, was gone. That part of her mind felt numb and sluggish, and its silence terrified her. Her eyes darted around the room. The woman checked the monitors and tapped notes on a keyboard otherwise occupied, but Kaylee found Karan staring at her.
"What did you do to me?"
Karan stepped closer to her, but his eyes wandered over to the monitor.
"Please,"
she begged. The loss of her gift was like being blinded, the silence in her mind a gaping hole.
"What's happening?" Her body trembled, and black spots danced in her peripheral vision. Sweat slid down her forehead. She couldn't pull enough air into her lungs. As the seconds stretched to minutes, Kaylee retreated into the quiet, dark recesses of her mind. Finally, distant voices cut into the silence, and once again, the warm flow of life, not from her own body, flooded into Kaylee's brain. She choked out a sob of relief. "Activity is increasing in the right parahippocampal gyrus," the woman said. Karan nodded. "Once it normalizes, proceed with phase two." At Karan's words, Kaylee's relief drained away, an icy chill of dread taking its place. The next injection worked quickly. Instead of fading to silence, the voices grew in volume and clarity. She couldn't filter them out. The intensity of the noise seared her brain. Her body jerked against the restraints, and she heard herself screaming, begging her captors to make it stop. Standing nearby, Karan watched. Kaylee locked her gaze onto him and, without thinking, pushed her mind against his. This time her consciousness slid through like wind parting blades of grass. Karan's eyes widened. Kaylee manically scoured his thoughts, tearing through his mind with brutal disregard for the damage she might be doing. She had to make him stop the noise, stop this agony. Images, places, battles, even the memory of their last meeting burned a pathway through Kaylee's brain as if the thoughts were her own. Karan clutched his head and backed away from her. "Lena!" he shouted, and the woman approached Kaylee, something in her hand. Kaylee turned on her. "No!" she screamed. The woman staggered back and collapsed to the floor, convulsing. Blood streamed from her nose and ears, a crimson stain pooling around her head. More bodies filled the room, the chaos of their thoughts flooding Kaylee's brain. She squeezed her eyes shut, trying to drown out the roar, but their panic was now her own. She screamed and twisted against the restraints until something covered her nose and mouth and the world went dark. She awoke in the cell, blinking in the dim light. She tried to focus on the still figure seated next to her. When she lifted her head, stabbing pain shot through her brain. Gasping, she lay motionless. "I have something for the pain," Kaylee recognized Karan's voice. He held a tiny vial out to her. "Squeeze it under your tongue," he instructed. She complied, and almost immediately the throbbing eased. Karan leaned back in his chair, waiting. Carefully, Kaylee sat up, pulling her knees to her chest and hugging them tightly against her body. Her mind felt normal, with discordant voices whispering at a distance. She could choose to focus on them or let them linger passively in the background. Her body ached and her head felt cloudy. It felt anything but normal. Memories fought to surface. She held them off as long as she could until, finally, hanging her head, she said, "I killed her." Her chest constricted and sweat ran down her back. Bile rose in the back of her throat. She clamped a hand over her mouth and swallowed it back. "Yes," Karan answered.
"I didn't mean to."
"I know." Kaylee looked at Karan, trying to determine if something in his voice bordered on sympathy. He held his expression blank, and when she searched his face, he looked away. Just beneath the surface of her own memories, others churned. She knew they were his, the ones she had torn from him in a panic. Now they formed images in her mind, discreet and vivid, but out of context and confusing. The corresponding emotions in most cases were cold, restrained, calculating. But layered under those were others: pride, loyalty, desperation. The last time she'd been in his head, she'd managed to pull out pertinent information, and yet she knew he'd managed to hide his deepest emotions from her. Now, she had some of them. Under normal circumstances, she had a great deal of control over an empathic exchange, but under stress it could be messy, inexact. When, years ago, she'd healed Derek after he'd crash-landed on her planet, she'd inadvertently stumbled onto some of his powerful memories, and in turn had left her own behind. Both of them had been disoriented, knowing they shared intimate details from each other's lives, but without really understanding the context. He'd had a brain injury, though, and if she'd hesitated, he'd have died. Her thoughts lingered on Derek, The ache of missing him was a physical thing, squeezing her chest and leaving her momentarily breathless. He'd know she was still alive. He'd be searching for her. But despite all the resources he could access, all his skill as an officer with the Alliance, he might never find her. She wanted to go home. Rage, cold and violent and directed at Karan, flared briefly in her mind. In that second, if she could, she'd have killed him to have her life back. When Karan looked up at her again, he flinched slightly before carefully arranging his features. "You're dangerous." "So are you," she answered. "We are two parts of a whole." Kaylee froze. "What have you learned about your history? About where you came from?" he asked. She swallowed hard, her thoughts racing. He didn't wait for her answer. "Drakkarans are taught who we are, and where we come from since childhood. We've never lost our history."
"I don't..."
she began, and then stopped, shaking her head.
"Yes, you do," Karan said. "There was a war on your home world, not the recent one, but another, a millennium ago.
It essentially ended our civilization. We lost all the records. We didn't know who we were,"
she whispered.
"But I think now you do," he said.
"The Nivali, the people like me who could do things with our minds, we were an experiment,"
she replied, staring blankly ahead, remembering. The Resistance had found an underground bunker, a safe hideout to weather the winter. Well-preserved, the bunker had been a laboratory facility from the first civilization on the planet, the original colony. Eager to learn what they could, Kaylee and her group had attempted to find any information left behind. And find it they had, in the form of a huge data library. From log books to lab records, a story emerged of a struggling young colony, and an illicit genetic experiment to control the next step in human evolution, all leading to a planet-wide war.
"The Nivali were the result of a terrible, unethical human experiment," Kaylee repeated.
Karan stayed silent, but he leaned forward, waiting for her to continue.
"The intention was to improve the human mind and body, make us stronger, smarter, healthier. But not everyone exhibited those kinds of changes. Some turned out to be empathic. Telepathic."
"The Beta Group," Karan finished. Heat flushed Kaylee's face. She leaned back against the cold wall as tears streaked down her cheeks. All the pieces of the puzzle finally clicked into place. When the war they'd started had nearly decimated Almagest, some Nivali had escaped, fled in defeat to find a new home. But the Beta Group, the empathic people like Kaylee, had been discarded like worthless trash.
"You left us to die," she whispered.
Derek, Chapter 4. The landing fields in Alamath had been expanded and updated to accommodate the growing fleet of spacecraft. Derek waited alone on the edge of the south field for the solstice to arrive, watching the sun set behind green hills. He would have appreciated the stunning display of color on the horizon if he'd been able to do anything but worry. A cool evening breeze brought with it the smells of spring, new grass, and damp earth. The fragrance triggered vivid memories of recovering at Kaylee's hidden camp in the forest after his crash years ago. He closed his eyes and she appeared in his mind, thinner and haunted, but still beautiful. Her face was the first thing he'd seen when he woke up, scared and in pain and very far from home. He could still picture her smile of relief when she knew she'd saved his life. The image quickly transformed. Now she was screaming in horror as the Drakkarans boarded her ship and killed her crew. He clenched his fists at his sides, furious at his inability to do anything, terrified at what might be happening to her. A few moments later, a dark speck appeared in the amber-streaked sky, growing larger by the second. Derek tracked its smooth descent and watched it gently touch down on the landing field. 18 months ago, this same ship had left him here to start his new command, building Almagest's fleet. He'd spent over a decade as an intelligence agent for the Alliance, but his work now presented a completely new kind of venture. He'd tackled it with enthusiasm, the challenge of creating something a stark contrast to his previous job of impersonating criminals and preventing disasters. At first he worried that he'd become addicted to the game, that he'd miss the rush of danger, and sometimes he did. But mostly he felt satisfied and pleasantly exhausted at the end of each day. Somewhere in the back of his mind, though, as an Alliance soldier, he knew his other job wasn't really finished, not while the Drakkarans posed such an imminent threat. Now that threat was at his doorstep. He needed to get back into the fight. A figure emerged from Solstice, one Derek instantly recognized as Kat. Of course she would come herself. Derek had met Kat when they'd both first joined the Alliance. A talented pilot and an even more talented field operative, she'd been his pick for his team when he'd been assigned to Horizon. Their friendship spanned decades, and their loyalty to one another ran deep. She started to walk toward him and then broke into a jog, unabashedly throwing her arms around him when she reached him. Derek buried his head in her shoulder, grateful for this one private moment when he didn't have to hold himself together.
"We'll find her," Kat whispered into his ear.
Derek had already greeted his crewmates and settled into his quarters. Several of those familiar and welcome faces now surrounded him at the conference table, and he was eager to dive into the briefing. Captain Donovan sat at the head, with Kat and Drew Chase across from him. At his left side, Derek was surprised to see the agent he'd previously worked with during the attempted rescue of the Nevali child from human traffickers.
"Lieutenant Commander Sean Asher is on loan to us for the duration of our mission to find and rescue Dr. Chris," Donovan began. "He's been busy over the last 18 months and has vital intel."
"Good to see you," Derek said.
"Likewise," replied Sean with a nod. "I'll let him catch you up, Derek," Donovan said.
Sean cleared his throat. "After we parted ways on Alista, I promised to keep looking for the Nevali girl, and that became my official order anyway. Command suspected that trail would lead us to the Drakkaran somewhere along the line, so there was potentially even more to be gained in the process. I'll spare you the details, but bottom line, the mercenary who kidnapped the girl was taking her to Mira." Derek sat back in his chair, his thoughts churning. Mira was an Alliance world that had fallen victim to a massive Drakkaran invasion force and remained occupied. It was also Drew Chase's home planet. Derek threw a quick glance in Drew's direction, but the younger man didn't react. Drew nearly always looked unperturbed, keeping his emotions well in check, a necessary skill for an explosives expert.
"Did they make it to Mira?" Derek asked, returning his attention to Sean.
Hesitating for a moment, Sean shook his head.
"No. I'd intended to grab the girl on Baishan, but somehow they caught wind of my tail and made it to their ship. I followed them out of the system and fired, just a shot to slow them down. Turns out it was a lucky shot, or a very unlucky one, because it caused a chain reaction and blew the core."
"Damn," Derek said, rubbing his hands over his face.
"Yeah, it was a bad day."
Sean stared down at the table, a muscle in his jaw twitching.
"Her name was Nissa," Kat said softly, giving Derek a somber look.
A heaviness weighed on the room. Captain Donovan waited, giving his crew time to process the information. Leaving that girl behind had haunted Derek, and until this moment, he'd held out hope she'd be rescued. Now he'd have to tell her brother she was dead. After several heartbeats, Sean spoke again.
"I think Mira is where they'll have taken Kaylee."
Derek's stare met Sean's, his thoughts racing.
If that's where they were taking Nissa, it made sense it was where they'd take Kaylee. His rush of excitement over this new piece of information was immediately tempered by the impossibility of reaching her there.
"There's been no intel out of Mira since we surrendered the planet a decade ago. The Alliance operatives who stayed behind were never heard from again."
"I know," the agent replied, "but the Alliance has reason to think the Drakkaran hold on Mira might be weakening. Maybe they're stretched too thin. Maybe the Mirans are finding a way to harass them from the inside. Whatever the case, I'm supposed to find out."
Admiral Reyes had Commander Asher rendezvous with Horizon when we realized that Kaylee might be on Mira, Captain Donovan said. Derek sat back in his chair, putting the pieces of information together in his mind. How much intel do you have so far? Sean shrugged. Not much yet, but I may have a way of getting onto the planet. Derek glanced between Kat and Drew. All three of them had been on Mira during the war. All three had witnessed firsthand the brutality of the Drukharan invasion force. And now they'd be sneaking back in behind enemy lines, essentially blind. His gut knotted. But to find Kaylee, he'd do it. He'd do anything.
Kaylee. Chapter 5.
Get up!
The sharp command woke Kaylee from a sound sleep. She sat up, heart thudding in her chest, as bright light flooded her cell. Aside from the guards who brought her meals, Kaylee had been left alone. Without any natural light filtering into the isolated chamber, she couldn't be sure how much time had passed. During the solitary hours, she alternated between relief that she wasn't being tortured with the drugs and despair so deep she thought she might never find her way out of it. Karan's imposing figure in the open doorway sent a coil of dread snaking up her spine.
Move,
he ordered. Standing on shaking legs, she forced herself to follow him. When they passed the medical lab without pause, the trembling in Kaylee's body subsided, a portion of her terror transforming to curiosity. They approached a security checkpoint leading out of the building. A guard nodded once at Karan, and he strode out with Kaylee on his heels. A chill breeze lifted the limp curls from her forehead. She took a deep breath, inhaling the faint scent of salt water that hung in the air. It was nighttime. Spotlights illuminated the exterior of the building and surrounding grounds, but the sky was dark. Stars twinkled overhead in an unfamiliar pattern. Kaylee stared up at them, disoriented. Karan motioned for Kaylee to get into a waiting vehicle and then slid in beside her. Go, he ordered the driver. The vehicle wove its way onto the multi-leveled highway system, Kaylee's attention riveted out the window. Squinting at the darkness, she tried to gather a glimmer of information about her surroundings, but the vehicle moved too quickly and the outside world sped by in a dark blur. She glanced at Karan, who wore his familiar stony expression. Now, however, she could feel the tension vibrating just beneath his still exterior. It was like she could tune into him. She held her expression blank as she tried to make sense of it. Making the empathic connection with him while drugged must have given her access to his mind. "Where are we going?" she asked, careful not to let her consciousness touch his, afraid he would discover this secret. "My residence," he answered. Immediately, an image formed in her mind— a dark-haired child playing with a stack of blocks, intelligent eyes, fragile body. This was Karan's memory, unintentionally stolen during that one violent moment in the lab. Kaylee turned her head away, stunned by the clarity of her vision and the intensity of the emotion attached to it. Moments later, they came to a stop and Karan rushed out. Kaylee followed. Motion-sensing lights flicked on, illuminating the entryway of a single-story house. Karan placed his hand on a flat panel to the right of the door, and it clicked open.
"Marta!" he shouted.
"In here," a softer voice answered. Kaylee trotted after Karan, through the entryway and kitchen area to a living room. The young boy from Kaylee's vision was here, lying still on a sofa. An older woman sat on a chair pulled up next to the couch, stroking the boy's head.
"You were supposed to keep him safe!" Karan barked.
The boy's eyes flew open, and the woman flinched, but she kept a gentle hand on the child's head and answered with a steady voice.
"He is a little boy, Daksha. They fall. You'll scare him if you raise your voice."
Karan turned to Kaylee.
"Help him,"
he ordered. Kaylee approached the sofa and knelt down.
"Marta," she asked.
The woman nodded.
"I'm Dr. Kaylee Chris. Can you tell me what happened?"
Marta's forehead creased with concern and unspoken curiosity, but she locked eyes with Kaylee and answered,
"He's only 2 and a half. He tripped on his own feet, but his bones break easily, too easily. He fractured his left arm."
She turned her attention back to the boy, whose lips were trembling.
His name is Navi.
All right, let me have a look, Kaylee said, peeling back a soft blanket. The boy's left arm was cocooned in a makeshift yet functional splint and held against his chest with a cloth wrapping.
Navi, my name is Kaylee.
She placed her hand on the boy's shoulder. With her inner vision, she followed the line of his bones from shoulder to wrist, her mind snagging on fractures and tiny bone fragments. The injury was much worse than it should have been for a simple fall. Kaylee could feel that his bones were abnormal, porous and brittle, when they should have been elastic and firm. She could heal the breaks with her mind, but not the underlying disease. She imagined Karan knew this already. Kaylee had been on Horizon when she'd first suspected the Drakarans were sick. She'd examined tissue samples from a Drakaran who'd been killed during an Alliance mission. She and the ship's doctor had hypothesized that the Drakarans invaded populated worlds for their resources and territory, but more importantly, because they needed people, healthy people, in order to run large-scale drug trials, possibly even to harvest healthy DNA.
"Do you have painkillers for him?" she asked.
"He is brave," Karan answered.
"He is a baby," Kaylee snapped back. Karan's fear and his own pain at the child's suffering hit her like a wave. Softening her tone, she said,
"I can help him."
Marta stood.
"I have his medicine. This happens."
Kaylee watched Marta cross the room, her thick, dark braid laced with silver swinging at her back. She pulled open a set of doors built into the living room wall. Drawers and storage cabinets, filled with neatly organized medical supplies and drugs, opened outward. Marta took something from a shelf and returned.
"Here, Navi, under your tongue. You know what to do."
Marta gently lifted the boy's head.
"There we go,"
she said soothingly as he swallowed the medicine. When he finished, she wiped a stray tear from his cheek and smiled at him. Seconds later, his big brown eyes glanced fearfully at Kaylee before fluttering closed.
"Let's get the splint off," Kaylee said, turning to Marta.
The other woman held the boy's limp body in a seated position while Kaylee unwound the material. Delicately, they removed his shirt. As Kaylee sat back on her heels and placed her hands on the boy, Marta's worried stare made her spine tingle. Karan moved a step closer. Ignoring them both, she closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and began her silent healing. With her mind, she moved misaligned bones back into place and then coaxed them to knit together. She sealed fragments like puzzle pieces and freed nerves constricted by the damage. The boy whimpered once during her ministrations, and Kaylee stopped to soothe him with gentle words. When she was satisfied that she'd repaired everything, she wiped a hand across her sweaty brow and nodded at Karan. Marta helped her replace the splint, and they covered the sleeping boy with the blanket. The older woman glanced at Kaylee with barely concealed astonishment. Gripping the side of the couch, Kaylee wearily pulled herself to her feet. Karan took a hesitant step toward her, his eyes moving between her and Navi. He didn't try to hide his angst.
"The arm is mending nicely. There won't be any permanent damage from this break, but..."
She let the thought hang between them. Ignoring the unasked question, he nodded and walked into the next room. The door thudded closed behind him. Kaylee blinked at his abrupt disappearance and then swayed on her feet. Healing depleted her energy. While Navi's injuries weren't anywhere close to others she'd tackled, this exertion, on top of the stress of the last several days, had her dangerously close to passing out. Marta put a comforting arm around Kaylee's shoulder and led her to the table. Kaylee sank into the chair and rubbed her temples. A headache threatened, and she longed to close her eyes. "Here," Marta said. She handed Kaylee a cup of water and sat down across from her. Holding the cup with shaking hands, Kaylee sipped.
"Where am I?"
she asked, whispering.
"I believe this was the home of a former town councillor. After the war, the Drakarans confiscated property and moved their own leadership into place,"
Marta answered with an equally soft voice, glancing at the room into which Karan had just disappeared. She took in that piece of information. This was an occupied world, likely a former Alliance world. "Which planet?" she asked.
"Mira."
"Mira," Kaylee repeated. She knew little about the planet, only that it had experienced some sort of civil unrest and had caught the attention of the Drakkarans. They'd invaded and remained the occupying force, cutting the planet off from the Alliance.
"You're Miran, not Drakkaran."
Marta nodded. "My own children left with their families years before the invasion, when the first drought decimated much of this continent's food supply. They migrated back to Arathos. I understood. I probably would have done the same years ago when they were young. But I'm a teacher, and many of my students' families didn't have the means to leave. I couldn't abandon them. I thought we would weather the upheavals, find solutions. No one anticipated the Drakkarans," she said.
Kaylee leaned forward, intent on learning everything she could. "How did you end up here, taking care of Na'vi?"
"After the war, while the Drakkarans were restructuring our government and installing their own people, Karan found me. He'd heard I'd been a teacher and requested I care for his young son." She paused and gave Kaylee a small smile.
"Request is probably the wrong word, but that little boy is innocent, and he's sick, so I do my best for him."
Finished speaking, Marta lapsed into silence. Kaylee felt the woman's curiosity and met her expectant gaze.
"I'm from a planet called Almagest. Some of my people are empaths and telepaths. We can do things with our minds, like heal.
We're recovering from our own civil war, rebuilding. I was on my way to Corleone to formalize our membership in the Alliance when Karan's crew attacked my ship and brought me here."
"He must have had a reason for targeting you specifically."
Kaylee nodded. "I've encountered him before. I questioned him, using my gift. It's not something I would ever do lightly, but the Drakkarans had planned an attack on another world, and I had an opportunity to help stop them. We successfully prevented the attack, but Karan escaped."
She nearly told Marta the truth about her people and the Drakkarans, how they were all from the same colony, the same heritage, but she couldn't bring herself to say the words out loud. She stopped speaking and stared down at her lap, her eyes suddenly so heavy she could barely keep them open.
"You should rest," Marta said.
Grateful, Kaylee followed her into a bedroom and collapsed onto the plush bedding. For the first time since her ship had been attacked, Kaylee awoke feeling rested. Stretching, she appreciated the comfortable bed, a stark contrast to the stiff cot in her cell. She had no idea how long she'd been asleep, but the muffled sounds of the household outside her closed door told her it was daytime. Her clothing stuck to her body, sweaty from sleep and sour-smelling from days of stress. But hunger gnawed at her belly, and the more pleasant aromas of cooking food drew her into the kitchen. She found Marta seated at the table next to Na'vi. The little boy spooned hot cereal from a bowl, spilling as much on the table as he shoveled into his mouth. Kaylee couldn't help but smile when he gave up on the utensil entirely and began licking his fingers. Marta noticed Kaylee and gestured for her to sit.
"You must be starving," she said, moving about the kitchen to prepare another breakfast. "It smells wonderful," Kaylee answered.
"Na'vi's arm seems to be well healed. He's favoring it a little, but he tugged off the splint," Marta observed, handing Kaylee a steaming bowl.
"That's a good sign."
Carefully, she took a bite of her steaming breakfast.
"It's amazing," Marta said quietly.
"Where's Karan?" Kaylee asked between bites.
"He's left for the day. He wanted you here in case Na'vi needs anything."
Kaylee's spoon stopped halfway to her mouth.
"He left us here alone?"
Marta gave a short laugh.
"No, this house is a well-guarded fortress. I believe Karan is a rather high-ranking Drakkaran officer."
Kaylee silently continued eating. A windowless cell in the middle of a Drakkaran command center felt like a fortress. This house, no matter how well guarded, didn't.
Derek, Chapter 6. It had taken too long and cost too much to arrange this meeting. Derek sat tapping a thumb against his thigh, sweating. The loud, pulsing music irritated him, but the crowd of gyrating bodies on the dance floor and the dim overhead lighting made this particular club an ideal place to conduct illicit business in plain sight. He spotted Drew and Kat on the dance floor, their bodies pressed together, attention seemingly riveted on one another. He knew better. Neither would miss a thing. And nearby, although Derek couldn't see him, Sean Asher prowled through the crowd, keeping an eye on the exits. As he sipped his drink and waited, Derek unobtrusively scanned the room for his contact. He hadn't met her yet, but the deep-cover Alliance operative who'd set up the meeting had assured him she'd be here. Although it had been almost 2 years since Derek's last mission on Bai Shan, it felt like yesterday. The sweltering heat, the congested bars filled with questionable characters conducting questionable business, the undertone of violence everywhere, all made it one of his least favorite places. But it was also a hub of scientific research for those who liked to work on cutting-edge, often morally ambiguous projects, and were willing to sell their discoveries to the highest bidder. The Alliance had brokered deals here before, indirectly, of course, and would undoubtedly do so again. A woman approached the bar, sat at a high stool, and ordered a drink. From his table, Derek had a clear view, so he watched her for a few moments before standing. High, angular cheekbones, short, dark hair, lithe, athletic body, confident, almost arrogant mannerisms as she dealt with the bartender. Eventually, he made his way over and leaned in next to her. "Join me at my table," he said, more order than invitation. She turned to him and raised a perfectly sculpted eyebrow. Grinning, he added, "Please." She looked him up and down appraisingly and tilted her head. "Maybe I will." Grabbing her drink, she followed. When they were both seated, he addressed her by name and title. "Dr. Irina Tate, I think we might be able to conduct some business." He swirled the liquid in his glass and waited for her to answer. "You don't waste any time, do you?" she said. He thought he heard a note of disappointment in her voice. "Unfortunately, I'm on a tight schedule this trip." She gave a slight nod. "Nico says you want in on the Mira trade deals." "I do. I understand the occupying force is paying a premium for your cocktail specifically." Her lips turned up in a smile. "My drugs have been the most effective at suppressing symptoms and slowing an array of degenerative diseases." After a long swallow of her drink, she added, "But I already have a distributor." "Would you consider siphoning off some of your product for a one-time deal, if the price was right?" he asked. She looked at him, puzzled, but knew better than to question his motives. "How much?" "I'll pay triple the cost for one shipment, and the offer's firm. I don't have time to negotiate." Raising her eyebrows, she said, "My distributor isn't going to like this." But when she didn't outright refuse, Derek knew she was going to take the deal. "Tell him the batch got corrupted and you're making more. He'll never know. I'm discreet," he said, shrugging and tossing back the last of his own drink. "And mysterious," she replied, looking him up and down. He grinned. "Not mysterious, just opportunistic. Where should I meet you to take delivery?" She paused for a fraction of a second and then gave him the information. Derek stared at the control panel, Kat next to him in the pilot's seat. From the aft quarters, his crew chatted, their voices humming in the background. All of it was comfortingly familiar. He needed that now. He was used to working under stress, with a ticking clock and lives hanging in the balance. He'd done it for years as an Alliance operative. He'd even done it with Kaylee by his side, first when she'd helped his team on Tharsis, and later when his mission became saving her world. He'd worried then that neither of them would live to see their future, but they'd been facing those fights together. Not knowing where she was or what was happening to her was something else entirely. Dread filled his dreams, accosted him when he woke up, and gnawed at his thoughts during every waking moment. His solution was to keep moving, keep busy, but the dull hours of space travel now made that impossible. Despite his worry over Kaylee, he knew he had to keep his head in the game, or he risked getting someone else killed. As if reading his thoughts, Kat said, "We've got your back." Squeezing his eyes shut and rubbing a hand over his face, he replied, "It's the only thing keeping me going right now." He'd never admit that to the other members of his team, but Kat knew him almost as well as he knew himself. "How's Drew about going back to Mira?" he asked, partly to distract himself, partly out of genuine concern.
I think he's dying to get back there. You know him, though. He won't say much.
Derek knew Drew had been born on Mira, had spent his childhood there, and had left with his family as a young teenager. The Drakkaran invasion had happened a few years later, after Drew had joined the Alliance. Although the Horizon team had been part of the battle for Mira, the bloody, decisive fight had ended almost as quickly as it began. The loss of Mira had dealt a devastating blow to the Alliance, and to Drew, who still considered the planet his home.
"I wonder what we're going to find down there," Kat said, throwing Derek a worried glance.
He didn't have a good answer.
When they entered the Miran system an hour later, what they did find was a planet-wide defensive shield array.
"I can't see anything, but the ship knows it's there," Kat said.
"Okay, open all communication channels and let's sit and listen. See if we can't figure out the protocol," Derek ordered. There was a good bit of chatter from ships coming and going. When he'd heard enough, Derek initiated contact.
"Mira Control, this is the Kairos, requesting permission to land. We have our cargo manifest and identification code ready to transmit."
"Stand by, Kairos," a voice answered immediately.
Derek's heart raced. Kat sat still beside him, jaw clenched and forehead furrowed.
"Kairos, transmit manifest and code."
Derek sent the information and held his breath. In seconds, the disembodied voice replied,
"Kairos, you are cleared to land. Cue at these coordinates and wait for the next cycle."
Kat leaned back in her chair and closed her eyes. "We are actually going to land on Mira."
"Looks like," Derek answered, the tightness in his chest loosening a few degrees.
Kat flew Kairos into the cue and waited. When the sensor indicated shielding had dropped, she followed the other ships into the planet's upper atmosphere. Immediately, another set of coordinates appeared on her display console, along with a message.
"All ships, do not deviate from this course or you will be fired upon."
"Friendly," she mumbled.
"How many Drakkaran patrol ships do you see?" Derek asked.
She pointed at a blip on her display screen.
"Looks like only the one. The others are all trade vessels and mercenary ships. No Drakkaran battlecruisers in the region, either."
"Good to know."
"They don't need much with that defense network in place, though. Theoretically, no one's coming in who shouldn't be."
"Just us," Derek muttered under his breath.
Kaylee, Chapter 7.
"Why didn't you bring Navi to the hospital?" Kaylee asked.
2 days had passed since Karan had dragged her from her cell to his home. When they finally returned to the lab, Kaylee was clean, well-fed, and clear-headed. Even locked in the spacious facility with armed guards outside the door, she felt less threatened, less vulnerable than when she'd been held alone in her cell. Karan needed her, at least for now.
"Sick children are admitted into a research program," Karan replied, avoiding her gaze. "They're kept institutionalized and receive experimental treatments. Many die. Navi will likely die with or without treatment, but I'd rather he do so at home."
Karan tapped at a screen, new data scrolling up.
"This is your genome, completely sequenced, and this is mine," he continued, as if she'd never asked the question at all.
Kaylee could feel his emotions churning beneath his hard, expressionless features, but she didn't let on as she looked over his shoulder at the screen.
"Here," he pointed. "This marker is present in both our DNA, but in mine, it's corrupted."
Moving next to him and sitting in a chair, she leaned in to view the sequences.
"Look, there's another," she said.
Within moments, the analytic program identified 3 more key nucleotides that were corrupted in Karan's DNA, but not Kaylee's. Kaylee manipulated the touchscreen so 3-dimensional images of the biomolecules rotated on the screen.
"These corrupted nucleotides may be causing the genetic diseases afflicting the population," she said. Her professional curiosity piqued.
"They are. Our scientists have identified the problem, but thus far they have not found a permanent solution."
Kaylee's eyes darted between Karan's hard features and the spinning models in front of her, between his corrupted DNA and her healthy DNA. She heard his thought just as her own mind churned over a similar hypothesis. Her body might hold the key to a cure for the Drakkarans.
"You will keep my son alive. When you are not with him, you will be here. If you don't wish to be the subject of my research, you will do your own."
When he left, the metal door slammed, locking her in. Karan needed her, she repeated to herself. Alone in the silence, Kaylee scanned the room. She stood and wandered from one corner to another,